Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
I'm Taylor Fritz and this is Drop Shot.
The weather has been a little unsettled to say the least today, and rain has interrupted play quite a lot. It's also been hard to prise Gary away from his phone, but he looks very serious, so I will leave him to it. I'm just getting sorted for the next round table event, which is with top 10 player Kiki Bertens, who is also the highest ranked Dutch woman in WTA history. She had a difficult French Open when she had to retire with illness in her second round match against Victoria Kuzmova.
Yeah, it was really tough there. I didn't feel well at all. Afterwards also I was in bed for 5 days, so I could not do so much. So yeah, of course I had to recover from that a little bit more, but then I was getting ready again on the grass for my home tournament, where I was able to reach the final, which was great, of course, where I had a lot of opportunities to close it out, but unfortunately that didn't happen. But yeah, now we're here again.
But even though she lost the final, she was happy with her performances.
It was great because I haven't done really well in the past there. One semis, but that was it. I always found it tough with the pressure and just trying to enjoy my time there. I always thought like that I had to win it also a little bit before the fans, and it's our only tournament we have. But yeah, this year I was just trying to enjoy my time, trying to, of course, play as good as I can, but trying to relax also a little bit more and enjoy it. And yeah, that was what happened. So I was really proud of myself after that week. And of course, I really wanted that title. It didn't happen, but hopefully it will come once, yeah.
For Bertens, it is all about self-belief and realizing that she belongs at the top tennis table.
I belong here because I did a lot of great things over the past year, because otherwise you cannot be in the top 10. I think it was now nice that I reached all finals, like on all the services, so that was also a big achievement, I would say. You have to be really stable around the whole year, of course, to be in the top 10, to have great results, and yeah, not only on one surface. It's really good that last year I already had on the hard courts and then on the grass as well in Wimbledon, and then this year I think everything is going well as well, and I'm just trying to still improve it, but I think that has been the biggest change over the last few years, that I'm a more stable player.
But it wasn't always like that.
Before, I think I was always thinking like, okay, I'm going to lose this match. And right now, I believe that I can win every match, but I still know that it doesn't have to happen. So you still have to perform good. But I think when I'm at my best, yeah, I can win against everyone. I think a lot, I just like, I'm enjoying my time a little bit more on the court now. I don't feel the pressure as much as I did before. I believe a little bit more in myself. I know that I can play really well. And yeah, I think that's more the belief in myself has changed.
She still seems surprised by her success.
Well, I never thought really that I could be this good. Of course, you maybe think about it, but I never thought that I could achieve this. For me, it's just, I think everything is a bonus from now, what I'm still achieving. Of course, I'm really working hard for it, but yeah, I never believed that I could do this.
So what changed for Bertens?
I talk a lot with my team, but at one point I was like, okay, do I want to continue my career like this? No, so I have to make some changes, and I think that was one of them, just like, okay, I can quit every moment, but right now I'm still trying to improve every day and see how far we can go. Yeah, I was always thinking more like, what would everyone think about me, like when I was playing, or just not really focusing on myself, more like on everything around. And of course, that cost a lot of energy, like putting all the energy in not important things. And now I'm just putting all my energy on the court. And then after a day, I walk out of the side and just do something fun.
I really enjoy listening to Kiki Burtons, and I'm warming to her as a personality. I find her thoughtful and reflective.
I think, like, for every person, that's different. Everyone has a different personality. Some people like that pressure. Some people really like the belief or that goal to have in front of them. But I'm not one of those persons. Like, when I really put a goal for myself that's, like, number one or number two or, like, win a Grand Slam, then I only focus on that, and then everything else, I cannot handle it anymore. But for me, it's just like more like putting all the work in every day, putting the focus there. And then as a result of that, maybe good things will come. But I think, yeah, for every person, that's different. Everyone has a different personality. And I think as a coach, you have to see that what your player can handle and whatnot.
Doubles has played an important part in her development as a player.
I think doubles helped me a lot, yes, of course. With Johanna, we had a great run over the last few years, won a lot of tournaments and had fun on court. I think that's the most important thing in doubles, but also to improve my singles game. I think doubles has learned me to play more aggressive, to come more to the net, to make the points shorter, to get into that momentum. So yes, I think it helped me a lot with the game. But right now, for this year, we tried not to play doubles anymore and see how that was going, just to get a little bit more rest and just play here and there a few doubles. And it feels good also.
She is another player for whom playing on grass is a constant battle.
Well, I think for me, it doesn't feel natural to play on grass. I know that I can play really well on grass if I'm on. So when my serve is on and when I play aggressive, I know I can play well, but it doesn't feel really natural. It's tough for me to play really aggressive from the first point, from the first stroke in the rally. I like to build up my points, and on the grass, that's something tough to do. But I'm learning a lot, I would say, from my coach as well, because he loves the grass. So we are really opposite players. So it's been nice. Like, now I've seen him smiling for 3 weeks already while we're practicing. So of course that helps me also a lot to enjoy it a bit more.
Is tennis a kind of a voyage of discovery for you, that you're discovering things about yourself and your game all the time?
It's going to be a big challenge, I would say, a good travel. It's just like, I think I learned a lot over the years. I learned a lot about myself, about the world, about people, about everything. So I think it's also in life, it's helped me a lot, and I only grew from it.
You learn things from the tennis court that you take out into the wider world.
Yeah, I think you improve as a person as well, because you take so much from it, so much from tennis. So yeah, it's just a big part of my life, but it's still not everything. Yeah.
Next player up at the round table is Jay Clark, so I'm heading up there to take my place. I'm hoping Gary's going to join me too. Jay's going to be followed pretty much straight away by Carl Edmund, and I've never spoken to him before, so I'm looking forward to that. It's busy today, but really happy with the way things are panning out here at Eastbourne so far.
Yes, I like Eastbourne. It's quiet. It's a bit like Derby, but by the sea. I'm defending. I think I got lucky loser last year. Got back in and won a match, so... Yeah, hopefully I won't lose my first match. There's no chance of coming back in when you start in the main. So, yeah.
How important are wild cards to you? And what do you believe they represent for you?
Wild cards, I think, are important for any player to kind of test your level against players and, like, higher ranked people that you obviously wouldn't get to play against unless you had the ranking. And it gives you... I mean, it all depends what you take from it, really. Basically, when I'm playing against these guys, I don't try to think, oh, I have to do this differently because I'm playing this guy. I actually just do what I do normally. I think that's what you have to do, because then you kind of gauge, is my game good enough? If not, rather than going on there and trying something else, like, it gives you a real good indicator of where you are.
Do you try and not let them cause pressure upon you?
Yeah, you watch what they do well. Like, as soon as the draw comes out, you do your research, so you know where their favourite shot goes, where they serve at big points, stuff like that. But I do that even at the challenger level I play. Obviously, they serve a bit better and they have better shot quality and they have more weapons at this level. So, yeah, if obviously there's some people that are able to put a lot of pressure through your game, but there's others that you don't really have to change too much. So it's just one of those things. I think, like I said at the start, you just need to play this level and you need to see what the differences are, if there is any. Or maybe I stayed probably a bit too long in the challenges before stepping up, but... And my ranking now is around 150. So I make every ATP qualifying guaranteed off ranking. And yeah, you just need to push because this is obviously where all the big points and stuff are. So you need to have a couple of runs of these and then close to top 100. I think it's been a good year since I played. Last year I won two big challenger events, went deep in a lot of tournaments, improved a lot, games changed, it's evolved. And yeah, this year I'm not hoping to maybe like qualify in one of these events or you know, maybe win a match if the draw fits right. You know, I'm actually trying to make a run in these tournaments now, and after Wimbledon I'll be playing these tournaments until the US Open, like this level. So
attention turns to last year's Wimbledon success in reaching the semi-final of the mixed doubles with Harriet Dart.
We weren't really looking at like newspapers and stuff like that. People would say well done, like I'd check my phone, it's nice to obviously receive messages, but I was still practicing 3 hours a day before I'd play doubles, before I'd play mixed doubles, and then I'd still be doing in the gym after. And then after that, I actually went and won my first challenger. So I used it kind of like as a practice week with some matches built in as well. Obviously, it's great to win matches at Wimbledon or any slam, but everyone takes mixed doubles pretty lightly, especially in the first few rounds. And as you edge, I think, into third round, so when you get into the second week, everyone's like, okay, second week of Wimbledon now. And yeah, but it's very different. Like doubles, obviously still like played like very seriously, but mixed, you just, yeah, you look for the relationship, someone you enjoy being on court with, who you can laugh with. Yeah, like I say, it's, no one really takes it so seriously. Obviously, it's like I said, it's nice to win a title, but yeah, you need to enjoy it.
Right, I'm not going to give up my seat. I know where the player sits. I've got my best position for the mic, and Carl Edmund will be here in a minute. I don't believe it. I've been thrown out of the round table sessions because I don't fit the right criteria to be in there, according to the established members of the press. Oh my God, this is nonsense.
So, Kerry, we're sat in the grounds of Devonshire Park at the Nature Valley International. It's day two, because it started yesterday on the Sunday, so we're here on the Monday, and we've been making friends this morning.
Yes, we certainly have. I'm just learning the ropes, as you know, about how one organises your interviews and organises your schedule. The way it works is that you have to go to the ATP for the men's tour, submit your requests for one-to-one interviews, and then you have to go to the WTA reps and submit your requests for one-to-one interviews with them. Quite an arduous task, because you can come up with a list, and if a player doesn't win, you may not get the interview and probably won't get the interview. If the player does win, then it's in the lap of the gods whether you will or won't get that interview.
You'll get, at the beginning of an event like this, you'll get some media opportunities with players where they do a round table where you just turn up, and it's sort of like an informal press conference in a way, but more intimate. So we go along to them, and you've done Halep this morning, you've done Barty, who else?
Kiki Bertens, and then finally, funnily enough, Jay Clark.
Yeah, so then what happens is some very abhorrent people from the broadsheet start complaining that we're in there, because apparently we're broadcast. And now you've seen the shadier side of journalism, where they got us kicked out.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very strange business, because actually it wasn't advertised as a round table do anyway. It was actually, I was told last night that it was press conferences, and I said, so it's okay to go along? And I was told, yeah, absolutely, that's not a problem. Anyway, it gets shunted to a round table event, which is basically a series of round tables, and journalists sat around the outside. There must have been, I'm just thinking for Halep, there must have been 8 or 9 people, that was all. Barty, there was more, there was probably 15. Kiki Bertens, I think there was only about 7 or 8. So it's quite a small, intimate affair. And that was fantastic. I was really enjoying it. But then when we got onto the men's section, we were sat down with Jay Clark. That seemed to go very well, except there was some kerfuffle at the end where some journalists were complaining and pointing. And it turned out they were complaining and pointing at me.
So I had to walk off to take a call. We're waiting for Kyle Edmund. Yeah, and so you got kicked out. And this is the thing that frustrates me about this, is that I can understand that they're worried about embargoes and where the quotes are going, but all they need to do is speak to us and say, so what are you guys up to, etc., because we're not broadcasting in the sense that we're going out live or that we're radio. That is a podcast, and we're doing them in a narrative style, so it's more documentary driven, and we're not part of the immediate news agenda. So now what we've got to do is we've got to fight and scrap with broadcast for content that, again, is going to be immediate content, but we're doing something that completely sits in the middle. And it just shows that the events with their dealings with the media are behind the times. It shows that these abhorrent individuals who are stuck in the dark ages are behind the times. And the fact that their budgets continually get cut and cut and cut, and their distribution keeps dropping and dropping and dropping, just shows that they're behind the times, because they were doing this in the 70s, so I think they can do it now. You know, it's just really frustrating.
Well, it is. And what I find particularly annoying is the fact that nobody will admit to conversations that have been had, or even suggest, oh, you might have misunderstood this. It's not. I mean, I was literally told to get out, and then to go and stand where all the other broadcast journalists are on a balcony, and there's a lot of them up there, and told to go and see if I can arrange an interview, which of course I can't at such short notice, and it's not possible. So whereas I'd be talking to somebody inside a round table format, now I'm not talking to anybody other than you.
Which is a shame, but what it shows is that we might be jolly and having a laugh as we're doing our work, but it just shows that the hurdles that you have to continuously leap over in order to get anywhere. And now I've seen some women having an ice cream, and I need a f***ing ice cream, so let's go get one. So Kerry, we've had to come inside because the story of our summer is that it's raining again, so we can't sit on our picnic bench and record. But where have you just been?
Well, I had to go to Paul Jubb's press conference, which is the first one I've seen him do in this whole summer, because it's just been one-to-ones at smaller tournaments, and I really wanted to see how that worked out inside a press conference environment. And he was great. He handled himself so well. Smart answers, really good. I think he really pleased everybody and excited everybody. There's something about him.
And while you were at that press conference with Paul Jubb, I was with Paul Anacone, who is the coach of Taylor Fritz, who obviously played Jubb and beat him in straight sets.
Interestingly, do you know who Paul Anacone used to coach?
I'm sure you're going to tell me.
I am. Roger Federer, Pete Sampras and Sloane Stephens.
Well, that's interesting, but what's even more interesting is how our interview of him sort of allows us to cross over with the drop shot universe, that in series one we spoke to David Nankin, who is also Taylor Fritz's coach, and we sort of when we were speaking to David, we sort of bemoaned the fact that we missed our interview with Taylor and then we didn't get him, you know, like we explained in season one. But then what happened is I'm sat in the players area with Paul having the chat, and who comes and sits along next to us?
Taylor Fritz.
Exactly. So here is that interview right now with Paul talking about his work with Taylor, and he was on the phone to David Nankin actually just before I spoke to him, and they were breaking down his game against Paul Jubb. So we'll just hear from them, and then obviously you'll hear how Taylor comes in and interferes and sticks his nose in. So Paul, we're here at Eastbourne having seen Taylor Fritz put in a dominant performance against Paul Jubb there.
Yeah, he did a nice job. 1-6-2-6-3. Paul Jubb is obviously a new face on the tour. Done some great things winning the college NCAAs this year and then qualifying here this weekend, beating two good players in Rublev and Istomin. So Taylor knew it was going to be a tough match. But no, Taylor played very well, served big, and used a lot of power ground stroke. So I think all in all, it was a nice start.
So for the first series of Drop Shot, we spoke to David Nankin about what he's doing with Taylor Fritz. So explain how you fit into the the whole coaching role with him?
Yeah, Taylor lives about an hour and a half from me in L.A., so we do get to spend chunks of time in L.A. I'm at probably, last year I was at 12 tournaments that he was at, and it's going to be about the same this year. So we get a decent amount of time between, you know, the 10, 12 tournaments there and then time at home. And David and I work in close conjunction. David, you know, is really the full-time coach, and David's been with him now for 4.5 years. So when things go well, I take all the credit. When things go bad, I blame David. Isn't that the way to do it?
That is the best way. That's how I do it with my colleague. When we get praise, it's all to do with me, and when it fails, it's him.
Exactly.
So how does that dynamic work when there's two coaches? Because obviously it's a common thing, but how does it work, you know, well, in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, right before you and I sat down, that's I was talking to David on the phone, just giving him a rundown of what's happened today, what's going on this week in practice, what are the tendencies and habits, what's going well, what we've been working on. And then we bounce ideas off each other, because the biggest thing is when there's more than one coach, it's okay to have different voices, but the messaging needs to be the same. Personalities are always going to be a little different, but you have to have, I think, similar messages, otherwise the players get confused. So David and I are very like-minded in terms of what we think he should do and the way he should do it. And so as long as the communication is good between us, then things go really well. And David's done, you know, an unbelievable job in the last few years building a great foundation with him. So I think Taylor's really, you know, been on a great run now, and there's no reason that it's not going to continue to go.
So did David get to watch the game today? Did he watch it stream it? Or
he did watch it back in the States, and he did get to see it, and we just talked about some of the things that we saw, talked about some of the stuff that we've been working on the last few days, and then just some other things to look at moving forward. So again, the collaboration is pretty consistent and the communication is really clear. So when that's the case, it makes it easy.
Like I said, it was a very dominant performance from Taylor, but he was playing a player that, oh, here we go, and he just turns up.
Yeah.
It was a potential banana skin for him, right? Because you've got Jarb having done so well in the college system, and then he turns up and he, like, you know, he's got a British crowd behind him, but it was a dominant, it was a professional.
There's no easy matches. Taylor knows that, and that's why he tries to be professional and dot the I's and cross the T's. And look, got up an early break, and Jubb came back, broke right away, and he knew that he was going to be in for a struggle and had to play good, consistent tennis, and he did. Good shot selection, used a good first serve and power baseline tennis, and things went well. Don't you think, Taylor? Comments about the match?
No.
Happy with the way you played?
Yeah, pretty happy.
What did you think about his game?
He's very fast. He's quick. So if I wasn't sharp, you know, I wouldn't be able to string together enough good shots to win the points. So
you got to be in the right frame of mind, which I was really impressed with, because if you don't know who you're playing and all of a sudden you have a newcomer, and after that first game when he broke Taylor back when Taylor's up a break, I could see Taylor kind of re-engage and go, okay, I just got to be ready. One extra ball, put the points together, and that's what we saw. So it was a good effort.
Do you want to ask you a question, Taylor? Just about, so Paul's here, but who's your favorite coach, Paul or David?
It's a team, right?
Whatever, it's a team, but whatever coach travels more.
Whoever's with him at the moment. David travels a little more. David's got seniority, so I follow his lead. And like I said, when things go well, I take the credit. When things go bad, I blame David.
So when we spoke to David in Milan at the Next Gen, he said that Taylor plays a lot of Fortnite, but he doesn't really play with him, that he watches. So do you play Fortnite or do you watch?
He's yet to offer me a lesson. I've watched a couple times, but he hasn't offered me a lesson.
I've been Fortnite all year.
Oh, really? Oh, what made you give it up?
Just kind of got bored of it.
Focus on your tennis.
He's working too hard now.
So just looking at Paul Jubb quickly as well, how much do you know about the college system in America? Because it's very different to what we do in the UK.
Yeah, it's very good. So for him to win the NCAAs is a heck of an accomplishment. Look, when he started there, he was number 6 on the team. And to come through what he's done the last couple of years and win the NCAAs, he's done a great job. So, you know, his big question now is, what do I do from here? Do I go back to school and try to get his degree? Or do I take the springboard that I have, which now is commercial viability in terms of getting contracts and things like that over here and try to get my pro career started. So he's got good people around him here, and James Trotman's trying to help a lot. So he's trying to figure out the right thing to do. He'll absorb all the information, see what the options are, and they'll make a good decision.
Because that college system's serving British tennis well at the moment, because you've got Cam Norrie's come through it as well.
I'll tell you what, I was here with the LTA from 2007 to 2010, and I was a huge proponent of it. I couldn't get a lot of people to buy in. My late, great, and very dear friend Paul Hutchins was very big on it as well. We had many conversations. Paul tried to steer a lot of players there. I strongly believe in it, particularly for players that need a little bit more time developing, like a Paul Jubb. Look what it's done for him. Now he's very close to being ready, so it's a good option.
And just lastly, looking back at Taylor, what are your hopes for him in Eastbourne now and then moving into Wimbledon next week?
Look, the biggest thing for me is not to look too far ahead. I know his capabilities are for him to be playing this weekend here, and that's the ultimate result goal. But as long as he does things the right way and makes good decisions, I'll be happy no matter what happens the rest of the week.
And Taylor, just quickly, what did you think of Paul Jubb and the way he played against you today?
I thought for someone playing their first ATP match, he didn't seem too nervous. I know my first ever ATP match was on grass as well, and I missed the first four balls I hit and broke myself in the first game. So he handled the nerves well, I thought. Thought he played solid. He's an incredible mover. He definitely has some things to work on, but I didn't know he was number six when he went to college, so that just speaks for how much he's improved. So I'm sure he'll keep improving immensely. It seems he's very raw, so, you know, but with his speed, he'll be dangerous for anybody.
Well, bonus, coach and player, unexpected.
Good
thanks
man,
for your time
right?
there.
Yeah.
Cheers, man.
Thanks
for that.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
I'll
see you around later.
Nice one. So that was the interview with Paul and Taylor there, but going back to the press conference with Jubb, what was he saying in there, and was he upset to have lost the way that he had?
No, I think he was talking about the fact that it's all a learning curve. And I found this from a lot of the youngsters and people I've spoken to over this summer period, is this idea that you can learn something from losing. And I think when you're young enough, if you win or you lose, OK, you don't want to go on a consistent run of losing, but you'll take something from it. For Paul, or Jubby, as we like to call him...
I don't think you're that familiar with him still.
I think I am. He's just come over and said, all right, Kel...
Yeah, sure. Well, why don't we just cut to what you said in that press conference?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just another good match under the belt for more experience, and that's all I'm trying to gain right now. So, yeah.
What does a player like Taylor does? Obviously, higher rank, in fact, two good wins already. What does he do different or better from you?
He doesn't give much rhythm. Like, obviously, he serves really well, and then his huge forehand. So, he takes a lot of points away from you. So, there's not much rhythm there. Yeah.
Are you physically okay? You seem to be hobbling a little bit.
It's just been a tough 4 weeks or whatever, and yeah, a bit tough on the body, the grass is, and but yeah, just recovery is key right now.
But okay, for Wimbledon.
Yeah.
You're broken four times, and you said, is that something you want to work on against the bigger opponents?
Yeah, serve's always something what you know, is good to keep getting better, and it's something what has been a weaker part of my game and something I've been trying to get better. So yeah, definitely.
Can you tell us a little bit about your plans over the next 6 months to a year, maybe turning pro at some point?
Just to gain more experience right now on the pro tour and just play more matches at this level, hopefully. And right now I'll be going back to college, so that's still my decision. So
you're going back shortly, yeah?
No, I was taking the fall off anyway, so I wasn't going back till January.
Okay.
But yeah.
And when would you finish up, do you think?
Depends with classes and stuff. Not sure how many more I've got to take. So I might end up having to go back another semester to finish classes, but yeah.
On the shorter term, I mean, people imagined professional tennis players with their entourages going on to the next tournament, etc. What practically do the next few days hold for you?
Still yet to discuss that, but yeah, probably just recovery tomorrow. I won't be doing anything really. I'll be just relaxing, and hopefully the legs will, get fresher. But I'll probably go back to London and then train some more and just, prepare for Wimby.
But in terms of the logistics, because costs presumably are an issue, Do you have to cancel hotels? Do you have to, I mean, how do you travel around and things like that?
I've been getting trained and stuff just around and stuff, but yeah, it's been fine. I mean, you have hospitality and stuff here, so the hotels are not, you're staying in a hotel for free, so yeah, that's...
But you'll be back on the train up tomorrow, won't you?
And... Yeah, tomorrow, yeah.
Do people tend to recognise you when you're... In the last few weeks, when you've
a few more people have started to recognize me, which is a bit weird, but yeah.
How many press conferences have you done?
Back in the States, they have good media over there, so you do a bit of media, but not many like this. Yeah.
Must be a bit weird to start with, is it?
Yeah, but.
when we first spoke about your wild cards, you were hopeful of getting a wild card for Nottingham and perhaps Ilkley. Now, here you are at Eastbourne and going to Wimbledon. How have you felt about those wild cards being awarded to you, and how have the last few weeks felt?
Yeah, just really grateful, and, you know, just my aim was just to make the most of those opportunities where I had been presented, and just compete my hardest and see what happens. And, you know, the more the weeks went on, I managed to do a bit better each week, so... you know, showing potential there. So, yeah, that it was just very grateful, really.
Have you imagined what it'd be like at Wimbledon?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, just a great experience and just one that I'm willing to make the most of.
Do you think has it actually fully sunk in yet?
Not really. Yeah, I think it'll probably hit me once I walk out onto the court, but yeah.
You're going to have a lot of friends coming down to support you.
Yeah, I've got my coach from America. He's already booked his flight, and one more person from America, so they're coming over. And yeah, I've already had a lot of people saying they're going to try and make it, so that's nice.
Just thinking you model your game a bit on Novak. What do you like about Novak's game?
I just love the way he like moves so elegantly, and just the way he plays, and yeah, just the way he can shut down the court and just physically outplay people, and yeah, I just love his game. So
seem to have a pretty kind of similar kind of return stance. Is that just something you always kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I've had that for a while. Like, you know, I've studied Novak's game for so long, and just that was just that return stance. Just I felt comfortable doing that, and yeah, I've used that stance for a long time.
Was there a particular moment you remember watching him as a kid where you're like, man, I want to be like that guy?
Well, not really. It was a while ago, but yeah, I mean, it was weird. Like, Rublev was another guy. Like, I played him yesterday, but he was another guy I was watching on YouTube all the time, and I've watched Fritz a lot of time on YouTube, so it's just weird, like, sharing the course with these guys, but yeah, it's becoming more reality. But, yeah.
Would he be the dream draw, Novak, at Wimbledon?
I mean, I'd probably stand less chance against him, so maybe not, so yeah.
Have you met or spoken with Andy or any of the other players?
I haven't actually spoken to Andy. I've never really met him in person, you know, but all the other British tennis players, yeah, I've been around.
Can I just take you back to one of your answers earlier? You said people were beginning to recognise you a bit more. Have there been embarrassing moments when they've come up to you? And
not really, just really nice moments. You know, it's nice that people are recognising me now and stuff. It's something I'm not used to, but yeah, it's just a nice thing.
Do you have all your bags with you on the train tomorrow, or do you manage to ship them off with someone?
No, I'll have my bags, unfortunately.
So that probably makes you stick out a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Is there anything scary about Wimbledon for you, or is it just, do you like that big stage? Do you think you're going
to
well?
Not really. I'm ready just to go out there and just compete my hardest, really. You know, it's not something to be scared of, really. Otherwise, it could be an opportunity what's wasted, so, yeah.
So does it get overwhelming at all because it's happened so quick?
I mean, obviously it is a little overwhelming, but it's, you know, something you got to handle and something I think I can, so, yeah.
What's the biggest crowd you've played in front of?
Not sure. This past week and yeah, a few college matches have been pretty big, and at the NCAAs there was a pretty good crowd there, but, yeah, roughly around that.
How good a grounding is US college tennis, you know, to sort of then making the jump into pros?
Yeah, like the top of college tennis, like it's this season I was playing one and I was playing good players week in, week out, so that's something what's definitely helped me prepare for this moment. And I had a lot of good wins under my belt in college, so a lot of the good tennis I'm playing now is because of what I've done this past season at USC, so yeah.
Two more questions.
Do you think you'd be here now if you hadn't prepared in the US?
I definitely wouldn't be here now if I didn't go that route, I don't think. So, yeah.
Last question.
Will you be staying in this country before you go back to America and have time out at home? Or will you get back to the States before you start up your academics in January?
I'm not sure. I still haven't figured out schedule stuff-wise for later in the year and things like that, but just got to figure that stuff out.
So as you can see, he's very thoughtful about what he says, but he's also very straightforward. There's no dressing anything up. He says what he thinks, and he gets on with it. Very matter of fact, very businesslike, which is what I think he's like on court as well. Very much reminiscent of Djokovic, as he talks about. That's his one of his heroes, and I think he's modelled part of his game on that, without a doubt.
Okay, well, it's raining outside. Play's been cancelled for the day now, I think, so that means that I can go home, my two-hour drive. So I shall love you and leave you.
Just as Gary is heading home, we get a call from Curtis Clark, Jay's coach and brother, and we're going to their hotel to have a catch-up with him before the match tomorrow with Leonardo Mayer.
So, Kurt, here we are. We're sat in your lovely hotel overlooking the misty sea as it rains in Eastbourne. How has it been the last few days between Queens and Eastbourne coming down here, because you got here on Saturday, didn't you?
Yeah, got here Saturday, came down the train. Actually, when we arrived, it was actually, you know, beautiful and sunny and actually quite warm. I actually said to Jay when I got off the train, I can't be actually, this is the weather we've got again. And then, you know, I saw in the forecast the next few days it was going to rain, and I thought, oh wow, not this again.
How frustrating is this becoming? Because we're just following you around and getting frustrated as people that don't have to be on court. And for you guys, it must make your planning so difficult.
Yeah, I guess obviously, like I say, it's always the same for everyone. You've got to do all the right things, you know, prepare as much as you can, try and get on the practice course early so that obviously you can try and miss the rain. But it's things like that every single day.
The good news is that the forecast isn't anything like it was at Nottingham or at Queen's, so we're expecting it to be good throughout the week. And just looking ahead to Jay's game tomorrow, his match tomorrow, he's got a difficult matchup with
Leonardo Mayer
from Argentina.
Yeah, obviously different to his last opponent last week. They obviously do a couple of things similar, you know, big games, big forehand, big serve. But yeah, we obviously have our tactics, you know, going into that match and things Jay needs to try and do to win, or at least, you know, be successful at certain times in the match. So hopefully he can do a couple of those things.
Do you think the draw's been kind to him in getting him? Because when I was looking at his stats earlier, I was saying to Kerry, I was like, I know he's obviously ranked just outside the top 50 at the moment, but you look at him and I think you look at the way Jay plays, he's certainly beatable, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess everyone's beatable here. Although, and, you know, even the guys who are coming up and maybe haven't been to the top like them, they're all capable of winning against each other. You know, obviously they've come down for a reason, maybe to try and get some wins, or they've not played on grass or something like that. And obviously Jay's stepped up because, you know, he's won at, you know, a lower level, or he's been given opportunity because he's done so well. So it's kind of every match is even. Obviously, this guy was almost beating Federer before and obviously had some really good wins. So we know that going in. But most of the people here this week have had, you know, great scalps at this point.
And this place, Devonshire Park, holds a special place for Jay, I guess, because this is where he got his first ATP win last year against Ryan Harrison. A match that I saw and I spoke to Jay after, and he was very, very buoyant. And, you know, the way that he played is really aggressive against Harrison. So is that something that we might see tomorrow?
Yeah, there's obviously going to have to be elements of that. Like I said before, you know, with Jay's game style, it's never just one-way traffic. He tries a lot of different things in the match. He's obviously an all-round player, you know, comes to the net a bit, mixes up his serves, sometimes the bigger serves. Obviously got solid backhand, solid forehand. You know, he's going to try a lot of different things out there, and hopefully it works for him.
Do you think age can play a factor in this? Because Jay's 20... his opponent's 32, so Jay's fitness, something that when we were sat with your dad last week, he was talking about how he used to get Jay out and, you know, we're doing a lot of fitness work to build that foundation. And Jay says himself that he knows physically he can compete with most players on the tour. So do you think that could maybe come into it tomorrow?
Yeah, I think most of the time when these youngsters are coming through quickly, they're all very physically talented, you know, whether they're strong or quick or both, or they have a really good, like, huge serve, or they... Because the older guys, it's really tough to outsmart them because they've been playing these tournaments for so many years. So to outthink someone who's played maybe, I don't know, 200 or 300 more matches than you have in your whole career, they're actually beating them through physical strength or speed or some kind of way like that, I always think.
And you talk about that experience there, that someone's played you know, maybe 200 games more than Jay or 300. Is that a factor for you when you're planning for this, in terms of thinking, you know, how can we get around that experience and make it that it's not an issue?
I guess not. Obviously, when we played, when we actually look at an opponent, Jay always has a tactical way of approaching the match. You know, obviously, he has a couple of options. We always have like an A, B and a C option because of his game style. But also, obviously, his physical attributes help him a lot. And we always try to use them in the game plan that we create.
So who's travelled with you here this week? Is it just yourself and Jay?
So also we've got Rob Morgan here, Jay's hitting partner as well. And he obviously helps, you know, as and when he can on the coaching side. He's here with us too.
So it's not like a family affair like it was at Queen's, because being sat in the players' lounge, your dad, I forgot that you and Jay existed. And we just sat there for like 3 hours just talking football and sport. And when I text you later on, he said, oh, you had the Errol Clark experience.
Yeah, Dad, it's great that he actually gets to come down, because most of his friends are actually in the tennis world as well. A lot of Jay's friends, dads, you know, they all grew up obviously talking about the kids, you know, how good they could potentially be one day. So it's nice, obviously, when you get to chat with them, say, oh, wow, they actually did it. Or, you know, they've actually, oh, you beat him the other week. That's great. You know, so you remember talking about those kind of things.
Because he's quite the character as well in those circles, because we were sat there chatting and he kept apologising every 10 minutes or so, going, oh, sorry, they interrupted. Because he was having like players come over to him, he was having coaches come over to him, agents, and he seemed to just suck them in. And they were just all coming over like, oh, Errol, how you doing?
We obviously got to remember there's two generations. So Yaz, actually, my sister played. So she was obviously part of that other great age group, a bit like the 98s, the 1990s. So people around, you know, Ryan, Chizage, Wozniacki, all those kind of people as well. So Dad's got a very vast group of friends in the tennis world.
If it's not going to be a family affair at Eastbourne, does that mean it's work, and you've got to get rid of all of that other stuff now and you've just got to concentrate, not even think about Wimbledon next week?
I guess, obviously, with Wimbledon around the corner, you maybe have a bit, you have maybe one eye on it at this point. You know, you're thinking, are we doing things right? You know, making sure, obviously, everything's done right always, but you're a bit more focused. I think the whole team, you know, I think everyone here would be, they'd be lying if they said they weren't. Everyone wants, obviously, to win matches there, to be as prepared as possible. So everyone will probably be doing the right things this week. So this week, everyone will be playing well, I imagine.
So for you, what is the most important thing to take out of Eastbourne?
I want Jay to feel he's doing the right things every single day, to give himself the best chance. And then, you know, if he gets out there, even tomorrow, you know, he feels like he's done everything he could. Good acceptance. I always talk to him about that when he's playing a match or in practice. I always say, you know, have good acceptance of your circumstances. You know, if we've maybe had to have dinner late the night before, or we've had to travel the day before, you know, we first get there on the day on the practice court or in the match, I say, you know, have good acceptance of what's happened. And it frees him up to play better tennis. So I think it's important.
So this week will be gone within a few days, and then you're into the whole Wimbledon rigmarole. Do you have a set routine or a set pattern now that you're regulars?
No, I guess, like you say, just try to do everything you normally would. It's obviously easier there. You've got the ice baths. Obviously, you actually have those at these tournaments as well, but you have everything kind of laid out for you. You know, obviously, the food's great, the Grand Slams. So you're very lucky. Everything's kind of where you need it, and it's very accessible.
It's interesting. You know, you're talking to sports people when they say, it's great, they have ice baths. For me, that sounds terrifying, you know.
What I'm more interested in is the food's good for the players, but is it good for you, Kurt?
It's good depending on how much you eat, and I eat a lot, so that's not good.
We need to go to Wimbledon.
We probably do.
Yeah, get yourself some strawberries and cream.
And with thoughts of strawberries and cream going through our minds, we bade Curtis farewell, and we will see him on court in the morning. I wave Gary adieu and pause to think. It has been an unusual day, and one that had highs and lows, but we've come through it with a few scrapes and scratches. The one thing I've taken out of it is that I know I don't want to be a sports journalist at all. I prefer being a documentarian. I don't like feeding on scraps and being grateful for whatever I receive. And as much as I'm enjoying the experience, both good and bad, I hanker for the days when drop shot is taken seriously enough that I can just sit down with players and have a chat. But I also understand that we have to earn our position in this world. As I was told in Birmingham by one of the senior people there, we have to prove ourselves as deserving of what I would call the keys to the kingdom. I understand the world of sports is different, but so are we. We're not searching for tomorrow's headline. We're trying to understand what makes these people tick, what motivates them, and how they deal with the game and their role within it. And I think we're trying to create a unique tennis podcast. It's more chat show within an audio road trip, I guess. Time to get some dinner with my wife, Jackie, and her brother, Steve, and his girlfriend, Jane. There's a great Italian restaurant called Rosetto. I need to stop thinking and relax. Tomorrow is just around the corner, and who knows what the new day will bring. I hope to get to speak to Cam Norrie, and also really want to chat with Aryna Sabalenka, who I think is the most exciting player in the women's game right now. I tried to get an interview with her last year, but the stars didn't align. And when suddenly she appeared to speak to me out of the blue, I was off on another assignment. My phone kept blowing up with text messages asking where I was, and I texted back to say I was heading back straight away. I ran back to the media centre and slipped, and my shorts fell down to my ankles while carrying all my cameras. It was so embarrassing, and I saw a woman miss her lick on her ice cream as she witnessed my downfall. By the time I composed myself and entered the press room, I was told that Sabalenka had waited a few minutes but had now gone. It just shows sometimes you have to be in two places at once when covering sports. I just haven't figured out how to do it. I'm determined to make up for it this year. Anyway, I've got to switch off and forget about my tennis horror stories. This is Kerry Levy for Dropshot, signing off. You've been listening to Dropshot, a narrative podcast series written and produced by me, Kerry Levy. Gary Hayes was my co-producer on the series. And when he could be bothered to turn up, also travelled across the UK to record it with me. Taylor Hayes is Dropshot's sound engineer, while Leon Raczynski-Gorman ably assisted on several episodes. Our podcast artwork is by Matt Alabaster. And Jimmy Goodwin composed our music. If you would like to hear more about the series, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at This Is Dropshot. This has been an original production from Highway 61 and Kerry Levy.
McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.